Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I had the absolute pleasure of sitting down with Mark Josie, who is also known as the CEO and founder of the Kansas City Pioneers. Mark and I chat about the development of the esports performance scene within North America and what this looks like from an organizational top-down approach. I was very excited to hear Mark's thoughts about the performance scene, his take on marketing and dealing with stakeholders, and the vision that he has created for the Kansas City Pioneers. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 18 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm currently joined here today by Mark Josie, who is currently the CEO of the Kansas City Pioneers and also the CEO of a local Kansas City marketing company called Social Apex. How are you going today, mate?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much for firstly taking the time out of your day to join me here on MyClickers. I've been very excited about this chat and I'm really looking forward to the things we can try and dig deep in today and talk about.
Me too. Let's do it.
Awesome. I guess we'll kick it off on one click is basically we always do an introduction. So I guess just a bit of a background about yourself, any experience in traditional sport even, and how you got engaged in the esports scene.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I would say I have a traditional corporate America background. I came from sales, marketing, operations for a big telecom, and ended up moving all around the country in the United States. Getting more responsibility, building teams, which was great. Ended up working for the president at Sprint, driving brand and strategic partnerships. Got recruited from another company. And then realized like, hey, I don't, and no offense to T-Mo and Sprint and Verizon, but this is probably not what I want to do when I'm like 70, right? Like we've moved around a lot and that's great. But so then it started, like I had a really interesting network, and then started a consulting company for like go to market and folks like, deploying strategy to branding and marketing and that kind of thing. And which led into a marketing company that bought our consulting company, which is Social Apex. Yeah. And then, so what we do is we make, high level content, we do content, social media and social media management. And we met Lorenzo Brown, LJ, which is one of the founders, right? And so he had this idea of like super passionate about esports. He knew Sam Kulikov. LJ is our chief gaming officer. Sam Kulikov is our chief creative officer. And so Sam and LJ knew each other. LJ says, you know what? I love esports. The Midwest is like underserved. We had like the 2017 Madden champion. This is my belt for all the viewers at home. Pretend I'm making this really dope belt. But like we thought, okay, well, this is really exciting. Like, how can we help tell this story? So that quickly led into, man, there's a lot more that can be done, and let's just really go all in. So Sam and I went all in, grabbed Alex Laughlin, who is our chief operating officer. And then we got ourselves a fancy strategic advisor named Jeremy Terman, which he'll probably cringe at me saying fancy. But, and then we thought like, let's go out and do it, right? Let's just start figuring out how we can, connect all the good stuff that's happening in esports, not just in Kansas City, but in the Midwest, and go out and do something, a little different. And here we are today.
Fantastic. And so how's the success been, I guess, since you started, you created the Kansas City Pioneers up until today?
It's been great. We have six pro teams. We're competing at a very high level in top tier 1 and 2 esports. We have some fantastic content creators, amazing creatives. We are very fortunate to have, I think, about 50 total people, I think. Oh, my gosh. We'll say 50-ish. Yep. How about we'll do the ish? 50-ish Kansas folks that are working hard to make Kansas City Pioneers a thing every day. And we're really proud of just the hard work that goes into it and the folks that, you know, choose to come on to KCP and the sports that we get into. So it's been really nice. We had a Rocket League team competing at the highest level. We transferred that over to Shopify right at the end of the season, but we took them from, and we can get into it, right? So they were like, I think 15th-ish, you know, a former team flight, and for them to end the season in top six in North America is pretty incredible, yeah. Right? It's like when we transferred it over, so that was great. We have a women's team and the WCBC, Women's Carball Championship. They completed their season, and finished number two, so they're number two in North America. So those ladies are cracked. And let's see what else. We have a Halo team, arguably the best team in North America. You know, they fluctuate around top one to three, and so we're really excited about the potential for Infinite. Yeah. You know, we have a Call of Duty guys that are playing in the Elite, and then we just signed a Rainbow Six team. And so we're really excited about that too. And then of course we have the Beast Mode guy, right? And then after selling our Rocket League team, we picked up a new Rocket League team. So we're excited about the upcoming season. You know, got an OG and you know, some other talented folks that I think are going to be really going to do some really good things. So that was a probably longer answer than maybe you wanted, but I'm excited, man. That's what we're doing.
It really sounds like you're ticking all the boxes. You know, previously I've had on Mind Clickers, especially from the North American region. You know, I've had on a sports psychologist, a physiotherapist. It's definitely interesting to hear everything from their perspective surrounding the esports scene and development within North America. So how do you see, I guess, that development within the next 5 years? Because I'm pretty sure North America is the one region where they have the most esports organizations. So do you see that growing further and further, or do you see just the quality being developed a lot better?
I mean, I think it's a mix of both, right? Like, I think as it relates to, you know, how you're playing at a high level, I think, you know, whether it's what you're putting in your body, right? Like what kind of supplements, your sleep patterns, like how do you deal with stress, recovery, you know, after a long stream and or tournament, you know, how do you harness your chi? Like, how do you understand flow? There's a lot of pressure, right? Like to compete at the highest, I wouldn't know. I don't compete at the highest level, but let's assume, right? We know, but truly there is, right? So I think that, you know, just very similarly to how, you know, traditional stick and ball sports that we would call it, take some of those things that I just mentioned very seriously. You've seen over the last, you know, probably 18 months and maybe a little bit before, but at least in my observation that, there's more to high performance and from an esports and a gaming perspective, and that unlocks a lot of different avenues, right?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I definitely think it's fantastic that you have that acknowledgement towards the health and performance side of things, because I've had a chat with a couple of people within the industry, you know, within Europe, who are a little bit on the edge in regards to performance. And, you know, you look at other organizations such as Excel and, you know, other people within North America, and they're really going full-fledged on the performance side of stuff. They've got their own facilities, they're building complexes where they can have gyms, and they're really going, you know, pretty much full send. And I think it's fantastic to see, and it's kind of disappointing to look to the Oceania region where I'm in, when you know, we don't have those resources, we don't have the ability to build up from the ground up, and you know, that's kind of holding us back as a region. So do you think that, I guess, in regards to, you know, looking towards the performance scene, we're going to see a lot more coming out of it in regards to, you know, the next couple of years, where more organizations are going to be looking towards other organizations, and they're going to be thinking, hey, you know, we like what they're doing, let's start to do that?
Oh, 100%, right? Like a couple of reasons, because the proof will be that these teams will compete at a higher level, or it'll be more sustainable, right? And there's ways to measure that. And then I think also, like, these are things that, you know, investors, sponsors, and things can understand, right? So you think about corporate America 50 years ago, I'm sure it's completely different than it was like 10, you know, 8 years or gosh, whatever. 3 years ago, 5 years ago when I left, whatever. which is to say that, like, health and wellness is important. Benefits are important, right? Like keeping your, you know, your employees happy and giving them benefits and thinking about wellness and mindfulness and giving them resources to, you know, for mind, body, and spirit. And so, like, I don't think this is too far of a disconnect which is usually what pulls that through, right? When you're thinking about how do I deploy capital, you know, to make the org successful, to make our team successful, to make the culture better. And those things are 100% going to contribute. So I absolutely think that. And you can see it now just in the evolution of, you're already hearing it in different sports of, you know, whether it's an analyst or whether it's like a coach that's mechanic, but then it's like, hey, we need coaches that are specific to like flow and energy and mindfulness, right? So just in terms of like the mind, and then, yeah, you're going to see more folks that are like, if you're going to game all day, like you should probably hit the gym, like to be like whatever. And you should also care about what you put in your body in terms of like health and supplements and some of these other things. So like it really has to be the evolution to continue to have, you know, one, I think it's going to be the evolution for like the gamer and the streamer and the content creator that want to be a part of something that says, hey, you can give back a little bit more and provide assets. So that's going to differentiate yourself. And then you're also going to see those people that invest, those orgs that invest, will kind of like the proof will be in the pudding kind of, right? Like, so.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, I definitely agree, you know, because for my performance side of stuff, I guess what I do directly is work with teams to address the pillars of performance. So, you know, you have your hydration, sleep, exercise, nutrition, you know, hand stretches, warm-ups, cool-downs, and, you know, that whole kind of movement really goes into, I guess, helping an individual, you know, perform at their best, right? So, you know, because I think, you know, you get to a certain stage where mechanically everyone is pretty much at the same level, right? And then it's the external things that we can look to change performance. So, you know, your mindset, your, you know, those pillars of performance. And I think that's definitely, you know, if you look back 5 years when I was a player in esports, and, you know, I can just reflect on it, there definitely wasn't anything of that. There wasn't any assistants, there wasn't any coaches, there wasn't a sports psychologist on a team. It was pretty much go out and do it yourself, go out and go into a tournament yourself. And it's a big comparison to nowadays where you have so many, I guess, external allied health professionals helping to assist a team.
Well, that's exactly right. They were just like, here, just chug this energy drink, man. Yeah, like, yeah, let's just strap in. You're ready. No, I think it's true. It's interesting. There's there was talk about an event that's coming up here in Kansas City, and it was interesting to see like optometry, psychology, chiropractors. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it's just nice to see that like a lot of it goes into being like, you know, a gamer and a streamer and a pro at the highest level, right? Just assuming that like LeBron James just wakes up and like, you know, is the greatest player ever, or whoever you think is the greatest player, that's my example. Yeah, there's a lot of work, and it's just nice to see that like gaming and esports are being complemented by some of these other things that can make, to your point, like mechanically gifted players play even better, right? Like optimize the performance. So it just totally makes sense. 100%.
100%. And what's your take on, I guess, traditional media having an approach towards esports saying that, oh, they're not athletes, they're not gamers?
That's shifting, right? Like I think that's definitely shifting. And part of it is pop culture, as you see like Ninja on Sports Illustrated or like, you know, having a shoe deal, right? You're like, tell me more, right? So it's just kind of that association constantly with like traditional sport, you know, mediums and access. And then 100% when the traditional pro athletes, like for real game, like that's what they do, right? Like, so we're fortunate to have, I mean, it's interesting because we have a gold medalist, a Wimbledon winner, a Super Bowl champion, a former NBA pro. And it's like, you know, they all want to throw on that. Well, I don't have a jersey on, whatever, but Kansas City Pioneers. And like, but it's because they're passionate about it. It's because what they've done. And it's because they, you know, appreciate, I guess, not just what the sport or gaming has given to them, but also like, you know, being a part of something where people compete at a high level as well. So 100%, like, it's not just me like grinding in the basement for like, you know, whatever, and my parents yelling at me to come up, right? Like, it's not the definition of like esports anymore. Yeah. And I think LANs will continue to help. It's kind of been a little bit dormant. So that's kind of cool. COVID obviously has been awful. One of the things that it did highlight was that like the way that people consume entertainment and media has changed. So we're seeing more people watch Twitch and YouTube and Facebook, you know, gaming. More people, like, there's a reason why when the pandemic struck, it was very difficult to get a Switch. It wasn't because all of the, you know, like, yeah, PC gamers and Xbox were like, I need to get a Switch. It's because all the casual gamers were like, oh, I need to go. Like, what am I going to do with my free time, right? It's like, this guy's in their 40s, you know, men and women in their 40s. Like, I have some downtime. I guess I'll try Animal Crossing, which leads into, like, Rocket League, which leads into maybe Apex Legends or something, right? So I think that also helped, too, the way that the casual viewer, we're seeing more casual viewers, more casual gamers, and more entertainment based around, you know, like Twitch.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that there has been that progressive connection between traditional sports and casual viewers of traditional sports. For example, you know, I think I recall correctly on Twitch, you know, they had some Formula One drivers actually do sim racing. And that really attracted some of the traditional sports audiences who, you know, watched Formula One. And then I think next week, one of them actually went out and bought an actual sim racer. So, you know, there's definitely a big connection, and that's kind of bringing the industry. And I think that's fantastic that we're seeing those things happen, because I think the adoption is inevitable, right? I think that it's only a matter of years before esports really is the norm. And I think, you know, the faster we bring that on, the faster the better.
100%. Like, you know, whether it's Olympics, you know, to your point, like getting, you know, traditional sports athletes ingrained into the, you know, their counterpart on the gaming side. And then, you know, what else is going to drive it is really just the athletes themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, as we think about pop culture pulling in to make gaming seem like a sport, you know, that you would consider basketball. But more people are watching esports than a lot of traditional sports, right? Like when we beat Energy in Rocket League, I believe 100, I mean, no offense to Energy, but when we were playing, you know, it's like 186,000 people were watching that game. Like, it's kind of mind blowing, right? Like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people, right? And then, you know, but what I was saying about like the traditional athletes, it's like, it's interesting for them is because that's something where their brand can live beyond the sport, right?
Right.
Like, that's one, obviously an opportunity to, you know, monetize, connect to different sponsors. And really what I think is most interesting, at least talking to, you know, some of our traditional, our, you know, traditional, former traditional, athletes, is that it's a really interesting way to connect with your fans, right? Mm. Like, you can't come out of the huddle at Arrowhead Stadium and say like, hey, Lachlan, thank me. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming to the Chiefs game. It means a lot to me. It's like, no, I can't do that, but I can in my Twitch stream, right? Like, I can say you by name. I can't, nobody's going to hear me yell for Jack Sock when he's at Wimbledon. He's like, well, we won't even hear my voice, but he might see me in Twitch, right? So I think there's a really interesting way that they can connect to you know, their communities and build a larger one, and the fact that we can have access to them is kind of insane, right? And so that's obviously going to be continue to be a catalyst, you know, for a movement to and just, you know, the younger generations are going to come up, and those are the sports. Just like nobody's watching, well, like traditional TV is not, and traditional radio is not nearly as popular. For a couple of reasons, right? Because we want as a consumer, particularly younger, what we want, when we want, how we want it, right? Like, I don't want to wait every week for my Netflix. Just like throw it all there and let me binge, right? I don't want to wait for the movie. I want over the top content. I want it now. I want to be able to stream it. I want to be able to talk to my friends wherever I go. I want to jump in their stream. So there's just so many nuances that make, you know, esports and gaming and, you know, being part of a community, really exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. And do you think because we've experienced that, we've had that experience of developing relationships with, I guess, you know, the content creators and being able to interact with them and have that connection, that there's really no going back to traditional way of viewing, such as, you know, traditional media?
Oh, I would totally agree. Like, there's no reason to go back. And then also, I think it's just, it's also very simple to it's simple, but not easy, I guess. But you know, if you think about the past, you know, year and a half or several months, right, that like Zoom calls and Google Hangouts have been the norm and like the business world. So then you start understanding, you started seeing like the corporate America, you know, folks going like, oh, we're going to have a virtual happy hour. And then it's like, oh, so now you kind of get an idea of what building a community your own and why I would have my own Discord channel and why you should come watch me stream and why, like, I reward you because you're like, you're a homie. So yeah, I don't think we're going to go back there. And candidly, there's really no reason to, you know, once, you know, everyone is cleared across the globe to be able to, you know, connect face to face at LANs and stuff. That's not going to like change in terms of like, oh, like, you know, less online interaction, right? I mean, it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, as unfortunate COVID was, you know, where traditional sports was essentially halted, you know, esports pretty much grew exponentially, right? Because nothing can really change. You know, yes, LANs are canceled, but online still goes online. And I think that's definitely, you know, definitely a positive that's come out of COVID in regards to the growth, in regards to, you know, as you mentioned, traditional sports athletes getting engaged within esports and building their own, you know, marketing themselves online. And I think that's fantastic.
365, right? 24/7, 365. Sure. That's just never stops.
Yeah. So when we're actually just briefly talking about traditional sports athletes, it started to really connect. So what happens if we took a traditional sports athlete, for example, a Madden player or an NBA player, and then put them in Madden or NBA 2K at the elite level? Would they be able to mechanically be able to understand the game to the same degree as someone who previously as a professional player would be, you reckon?
I mean, I think it would be like strategy wise, yes, but like it's one of those kind of like false equivalencies, right? Like just because I'm, you know, great at, you know, maybe I'm a very high elite pro player, football player. Like maybe I don't want to play Madden. You know what I mean? Maybe like I'm probably playing Call of Duty, right? Or Fortnite. right. And so, yeah, I think from a strategy perspective, but like, it's just different mechanics, right? It's different. Mm-hmm. It's 100% different experience, right? Getting tackled in real life is probably is a little bit different than like whatever. Right. So I would say from a strategy standpoint, yeah, but mechanically there's too many different things, right? Like no. So it is interesting though. A lot of people, you know, that we talk to specifically because of some of the folks that do stream and create content for us. It's like, oh, do they want to play, you know, like spoiler alert, like for sure he'll play Madden, but he also likes to open Pokemon on his stream. That's probably his number one thing. So, you know, so yeah, it's kind of funny.
For sure. And, so you mentioned you currently have six games that you're competing in, and obviously one of those being Rocket League. And, you know, obviously recently you picked up a massive player, Kronovi. So, you know, how did that whole process go about? And I guess how excited are you guys to have Kronovi on board?
Super excited. like the mountain, right? Like OG. Yeah, I think it's very exciting. I think we love Rocket League for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, Astro, Aeon, Bob is Bella, you know, Cat Jeans, the whole team that comes over, we're super excited about, you know, the opportunity to crush it next season. And it goes about like how you would think every kind of like recruiting thing is, right? Like we have folks that are looking for roster changes, who could we go get, you know, et cetera. And then you have some dialogue and hopefully we do a really good job of representing like who we are as the pioneers and what, you know, how our community is and what we care about. And, and so, yeah, it just turned out to be a really, really good fit. And like, we're pumped for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So how does that scouting process look like? Cause I had a talk with another CEO of Fury Global, an organization here over in Australia. And we had a kind of a chat in regards to, I guess, searching for an individual who is already well developed within the scene versus searching for an individual who has potential that you can build up and that you can start to, I guess, work upon themselves. So what do you guys look for when you scout for a team, and, you know, what's the thought process that goes into it?
I mean, the short answer is it depends, right? It depends on what sport you want to be in. It depends on, you know, you can, let's just assume that all of the players, you know, are love your organization and aren't under all these like kind of things, but you can go out and deploy capital to go get the best performing team generally, or that's not true. Some of the best, right? Like some teams are getting signed like in Rocket League, I think for a couple of years, but most aren't, right? So after the season, things shake up, you wait for roster mania or whatever. And so that's kind of it, right? Like, and then what we do, and I think LJ and Eddie on our team do a really good job of just paying attention to so many things, from like deep in the subreddits to like 1v1 tournaments to like, you know, like who's 14 getting ready to turn 15 that can compete, right? Like, because we had to do that with Beast Mode when we picked up Beast Mode, which was, you know, on our original Rocket League team. And so just a lot of the, it's very much like paying attention, scouting, thinking about like, you know, what, who we could put together as an existing team. Are we going to, do we need a sub? Do we need this? And so I think those are the questions that you kind of ask yourself. Like, do you want to grab, like, are you going to grab one person and build around? Are you going to try to build like a team? You know, are you going to provide different coaching? Do you have different, like, you know, kind of amenities and things that we were talking about a little bit earlier that could be helpful. Yep. So there, I mean, there's quite a few like levers to pull, but in terms of scouting, like just really paying attention. And that's one of those things that you don't wait until, hey, we should, like, you know, like we should get a CSGO team. Like, it would take a lot of work starting today if we made that decision. Right. And so we're always kind of looking, and those are the things we think about.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. And so I assume you have your base players, and then do you also have a coaching team? So do you have a game coach, or what does that kind of coaching combination look like?
Yeah, it depends, right? Like, it depends on the sport. So, you know, some, I would say, you know, there's mechanics coach, there's, you know, mindful, you know, kind of more mental coach that we've had. There's analytics coaches, you know, there's kind of coach team manager, you know, so there's to varying degrees. Really, at the end of the day, it's like, what can we provide our players to make them the most comfortable and successful? So they have an input in that too, right? It's not just like, you know, welcome to our team, Lachlan, you need a coach. You're like, whoa, hey, tell me why. Or maybe I do, right? Or thank you, right? Or no, I got it. So I think it depends for us. So we have quite a few different, depends on the sport and it depends on the team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, running through a hypothetical, what say, you know, you, I guess, had a team, you picked up a team and, you know, you really saw the potential to really compete at that tier one big, you know, international level. But, you know, you approached the players about a coach and they were really resistant about it. They were saying, no, we don't need that. We've already got to the level of where we're at because we haven't had a coach. So, you know, why would we need a coach now? How would you address it and how would you, I guess, deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that you have built a good enough relationship where it wouldn't be just a, you know, a firm yes or no, right? It's like, right? Like, so, yeah. So in your hypothetical, I hope that we've done a really good job of building a great culture and you know, having an open door policy and being very transparent and authentic, which I think all those things we do. I think you just have to talk about just a couple, like you would do anything with trying to convince somebody your point, right? Like you would show them maybe some data sets and say, hey, here, you know, here's some suggestions, here's what we're thinking, here's the reasoning why behind it, here might be some examples of other teams, whether it's in the same sport or whether it's in a different, like, you know, that went from, hey, they shifted to this and they shifted and they did this and like we saw some things. And so I think at the end of the day it's just having like some discussion about that. I mean, if you would want to, you know, like you could say at the end of the day, it's like, oh, like we're just going to make this decision of yes, you will. But I would say that it would never get to that point to where, you know, and there's a lot of ways to do it. Just like, okay, fine, right? Like, well, let's just see if we could bring somebody in for scrims, right? Let's just see if we could just bring somebody in for casual, right? Let's just see if we can bring somebody in just to chat with y'all, right? Like even off the game. So I think there would be quite a few ways that we could say, hey, help us help you, right?
Yeah, for sure. that entry building rapport level where they can kind of test the waters to see if it's suitable for them.
Yeah. I mean, forcing anything on anyone is a terrible idea.
Yeah. For sure.
It's just good rule of thumb.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely relate to that. You know, previously doing some, I guess, coaching in the CS scene over here and, you know, definitely sleep schedules and all that kind of sleep kind of regime for one player wasn't really the best, and you know, they were pretty much flat out resistant to it. So then it was just a matter of trying to evoke those underlying motivations towards their sleep, and I guess, you know, why they were so hesitant to look at sleep so positively and see how it can affect their performance on game day. And you know, I ended up being able to change that and actually performed really well on game day. So that was fantastic. So, you know, most often than not, it is that kind of rapport building process and, you know, developing that understanding with your athletes, which is crucial and key.
Yeah, I think so. That it's all about trust, right? Like they have to feel that the org is behind them, that we have their best interest, or else it does feel forced and a little bit of contrived and like disingenuous. Sure. And that's the last thing, right? So
definitely. So previously you mentioned team culture. How important to you is it developing a team culture that's, you know, has good synergy, that represents, I guess, the ideal characteristics that you want to represent? Because, you know, we see a lot of different teams who have distinct team cultures, right? We have teams that who win a game, they pop off and they're all aggressive and they're like in people's faces and really getting into it. We have teams that who win a game and destroy it, but then remain silent and just sort of compose their own kind of their own way. So how important to you is developing a distinct key team culture?
I mean, the culture is everything. It's the reason, you know, there's an emotional and rational commitment that people have, right? And so culture is a big part of the emotional commitment versus like, I have to stream today, right? Like, we've not done a great job if somebody's like, I have to play in the finals today, right? Like, this is terrible. And I think the other thing is like, we don't, you know, our goal is not to try to bring somebody on and change them, right? So like, it's either compliment or, do something for a catalyst for them, but it's definitely not to go like, you know, we shouldn't expect that, like, if you're that person that kind of, you know, pops off as an example, we shouldn't go out and try to recruit you and get to the very end of like, hey, welcome. And like, oh, by the way, don't do that. That's not who we are. And that's not our culture. And you're just like, did you not watch any of my VODs? Like, what, don't you know who I am? Right. So I think the idea is not to change people. Right. And so there's a lot of delta in like what we're looking for and who people are, but ideally it's never to change somebody. So you should know what you're getting, right? That's generally not a surprise. It would be a surprise on our end if we bought oranges and we got home and we were mad that they were apples, you know, or we were like, turn into apples. You know, you're like, what? You bought oranges. What are you talking about? Right. So anyways.
So have you guys had any teams that have, I guess, competed internationally or have traveled internationally to another LAN or tournament? Or how has that process been for you guys?
No, so far we haven't had anybody let's see. We had Drakkar Halo. I guess he came from Canada to Kansas to do like a boot camp or whatever. Okay. And it was it was not the greatest experience for him traveling back and forth internationally, I think. Anyways, through North America. But I think it was like there was like a COVID test and that he took and he had to wait, and then he got stuck at the airport and he had to wait another day, which meant he had to take another test because of the time. And you know, so he had some kind of some shenanigans there. I mean, nothing bad, right? It had nothing to do with his health or anything. He was, you know, A-okay and tip-top and had no COVID, and that was great. He just got stuck a little bit in America longer than I think he wanted, but that was fine. But other than that, like, no, we haven't done that. I'm trying to think because, you know, the WCBC, most everything has been online, right? And so the most of the sports that we're playing, there is no LAN, so.
Right.
But there will be, sir.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And you mentioned boot camps. Is that something you guys are looking towards in the future in experimenting just to help with, you know, developing player synergy within each other and, you know, external to esports and, you know, being able to build those personality and relationships external to the game, which can then, you know, in return, help them in game?
Yeah, I think it's everything that we talked about, right? Like playing together, playing different, putting them in an environment that's different, but they're together is helpful. You know, plus the fun stuff of like shooting content and getting to know each other and like just driving home that kind of like, you know, we care about you, we appreciate you, like it's, you know, we're behind you, thanks for being here type stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of good reasons, I think, you know, whether it's reward or recognition or, you know, mental or, you know, just synergies with the team. So yeah, I think those things are super important for sure. Just get them out of the helmet, get them together.
For sure. Awesome. And I guess, boot camps definitely have that impact of, as you said, getting a team out of their element and building their synergy and hearing from that. Because I previously had on a player from the Direwolves. It was actually my first episode, and he talked about, I guess, his experience as a team in Korea and, the different experiences they went through, and that actually built them, built different relationships and connections they think they wouldn't have built if they hadn't have done that boot camp. So I definitely think there is a big importance and stress of, I guess, taking players away from their environment and putting them in an environment they're unfamiliar with and seeing how that relationship and synergy builds, for sure.
I mean, I do think that there's a lot of value in it, right? Because of all those reasons. I think the more interesting part, besides like the culture and getting together and having fun and, saying thank you and appreciative, is really just taking them out of an environment. Even if you play together every day, right? Like if you're in the team house, it's like, it's completely different when all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, we're in Korea now, right? Our team house is in Germany. Yeah. Like this is different, right? So like, I think that, kind of getting out of their environment, seeing how they respond. And then of course, like, getting some dubs hopefully, but even playing together and saying, hey, we went through this experience. It was really cool. And of course, like our org's behind us and we feel really great about it is I think good for everyone involved.
For sure. Definitely. So what is, I guess, KCP's vision towards the future? Is it expanding internationally? Is it expanding and building that actual quality of team within North America? Or, what is your vision towards, I guess, KCP and the Pioneers?
Yeah, it's just continuing to compete at a high level and tier one and tier two esports. I mean, that's really it. And then continue to build our community, continue to, scale with internally, continue to with, which is like our creative team. And then scale with content creators that, resonate to either our community or the sport that we're in. And so, it kind of just depends, I'm not saying tomorrow we're like, we're all in Dota, right? You're like, wait, okay, that's not like very specific for North America, but So I think it will depend. I will say this, our goal, is not to be in like 15 different, sports or whatever. I think 6 or 8 is a really good sweet spot for us.
So is there any, I guess, interest? Well, maybe that's kind of you slipped under the rug, but is there any interest, I guess, looking at Valorant?
Yeah, for sure. Valorant is yeah. I mean, that's short answer is yes. Yes, there is.
Yeah.
I hear it's going to be a big thing. No, I'm kidding. Of course it's a big thing. We'll look at it. We have looked at it. We talk to people like as every org does. Right. And so it's just, it's about timing. It's about like, how we deploy, how we enter, what does that look like? Right. So for sure, Valorant is up there. I think I mentioned CSGO, right? Like we're in Gears before. So we're always kind of looking. We're definitely not, just scouting for the sport that we're in, right? Because we feel pretty good about the one where we're at and two, who we have, right? We're always looking.
For sure. And do you think that in regards to, I guess, within the North American esports, scene and region, you can look towards other organizations and try and see what they're doing? Or was it more so we want to build our own, we want to know what we're doing, and we want to try and continue our legacy?
It's definitely the latter, but you would be remiss if you didn't pay attention to your competition, right? So you should definitely know, right? You don't want to just be running an esports org with not understanding what's going on or who you're playing against or why fans are interested there or, what endemic, non-endemic sponsors. So I think there's a lot of things that go up, but at the end of the day, like we feel that the Midwest is underserved. Right. And so we want to anchor here and then build fans all over the world. It's like very, very similar, like traditional sports, right? Like the stadium is here, the players come here, but they all don't live here. Right. And, to continue in that vein, we'll pay attention to other people, right? But we don't want to be pegged as like, oh, you're a Kansas City. It's not we're Kansas City formed, like globally, driven, right? And also from a geographic standpoint, like there's a couple of geographical orgs, right? So there's like Pittsburgh Knights, and Susquehanna, and Alpine. Pittsburgh Knights. Did I say that twice? Anyways, yeah, there's a couple of, you know, geographically based teams, but we're not trying to replicate anyone either, right? So we're going to continue to do our own thing and crush it.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And you mentioned sponsorships and I guess that kind of stakeholder resource economy of things, which is something I, you know, I'm quite interested in. I previously had a chat with Dave from Genevieve Capital, and that was a really interesting conversation in regards to different regions and looking towards economical models. For example, you know, you look towards the Asian model, and in regards to their economy, they're a lot player driven in regards to, you know, pushing. But you look to, you know, OCE and the Australia region, and it's more so, you know, a little bit lower, but it's more spread. Hang on. So in regards to, I guess, sponsorships and stakeholders, how does that process apply if someone comes to you and said, hey, you know, we're interested in sponsoring this team? You know, what does that process look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, to what scale, right? Why? And then also, like, we're pretty transparent, and I work really hard to be authentic. And by that, I mean, our goal is not to have sponsors that do not correlate to who we are, to who our fans are, et cetera. So as an example, I've said this a few times, but, like, you know, early on, we didn't take sponsorships from, like, Dave's Used Mattress Farms, right? Like, that's, there you go, right? Like, that's just, ugh, right? Even if they had a ton of, like, oh, but, like, here's, like, $1 million a day or something, it's just like, no, that's weird. So we really want, like, I say that jokingly to say that, like, it's much more, it's more of a partnership, number one,
right?
Like, it's a sponsor, but we look at it as a partnership. One of the things that differentiate us, I think, and we're not the only ones, there are some orgs out there that make some insanely good content, but we're one of them, right? Where that's a huge value that we bring, and we do that because we're excited about who we're partnering with. So if you look at, like, DoorDash as an example, like, that's a real thing that everyone uses. Like, this is not fake, right? Like, we're not to the, like, hey, we'll give you guys, like, a code to sell Mercedes G-Wagons. It's like, oh, sure. All of our, I mean, I'm going to say half the people in our Discord, like, would buy one tomorrow, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, shout out Mercedes. But, like, what I say that to mean, it's like, we want to grow with the partners. We want to have the right partners and sponsors at the right time. And it needs to be, like, specific to how we feel about how our fans and how our players interact and what they need, right? And it's an interesting question because there's a lot of non-endemic or, you know, companies that aren't traditionally in esports that are now like, how do I get in esports and gaming?
How do I get in?
Exactly. Right? So it used to be, you know, coming from the marketing space, it was like Gen Z. And now it's like, oh, but it's Gen Z, but gaming, right? Like, so how do we do that? And it's just like, okay, well, slow and steady wins the race, maybe. But so, yeah, I think it's always for interesting conversation, but first it starts like, hey, is it authentic? Like, do we use this? Can we get behind it? Would we, you know, be really excited to tell our friends and family about it, to use it, try it, et cetera, whatever. You know, does it make sense to our fans and our players, obviously? And is it a good partnership, right? Because if it's just like slap a logo on, it's just like, that's not good for them either. Like, what is that? Like, so let's find a way that, like, we can grow together. And so, you know, those are some of the things that we think about.
Yeah, for sure. I love that vision. I love that kind of that passion and being able to incorporate your community and your viewers and your audiences and, you know, your players as well. There's definitely, you know, obviously not going to name names, but there's definitely a couple of organizations, you know, global who I guess have more of a who can I get approach. And it's not about developing those connections that you've already embedded within the organization that can therefore have outreach to your audiences and you know who you connect with. So I definitely, you know, I respect that that passion and developing those underlying connections and relationships with your audiences.
Hey, I appreciate that. Like, it's not an easy thing to do, right? Because if you look at, you know, if you just look at kind of the revenue model from an esports perspective, like the lion's share comes from sponsorships, right? And so when big brands start thinking like, hey, right, we should, and it is a great way to reach a very difficult demographic, for a lot of reasons, right? If you're a marketing agency, or if you're, you know, a marketing arm of a company on the sponsorship side. So yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, and I'm sure there's definitely deals where it's like, you know, maybe, but like, yeah. but for us, it definitely has to be, you know, it has to meet some of that criteria for sure.
For sure, definitely. And I think, you know, looking towards sponsorships, I think probably one of the biggest ones you can look to is, I guess, in the way of, you know, esports, nutrition and energy drinks and that kind of domain of things. What's your thought on those things? And do you think that, you know, that's really needed?
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's evolving though, right? Like right. You see some of the newer, and I won't name any names, but more scientific base, more white paper base, more mm-hmm. like care about what you're putting in your body, and you know ingredients right. are important, and so like more natural, and yeah, so I think, you know, you can, you know, the energy drinks of like the early 2000s, like man, like, you know what I mean, like yeah. that's one way to fix that guy's sleep schedule, just binge out for like 4 days on those things. Yeah, so I think it is important, right? Like, I mean, certainly as an organization, you look at, you know, verticals, right? Like what, you know, makes sense from a sponsorship perspective, right? Is it, mm-hmm. you know, food, whatever, we don't have to go through it. But it's funny because there's like energy drink, but it's almost like pivoted to like health and wellness for us to right. start thinking about like, hey, let's have a broader conversation, because it doesn't just have to be, you know, a traditional drink. But mm. yeah, I do think it's important. And I do think that some of the food category there, or the beverage category, you know, has kind of cornered the market for a long time. And so it's really yep. exciting to see some of these other companies come in and talk about like different kind of ingredients and different ways that it helps you improve, and why post recovery, or, you know,
yep.
et cetera. But yeah, I think it's very important. And by the way, it's like, if you're sitting at your setup all day, you're probably going to have a couple of beverages. So we should definitely care about what you're putting in your body.
Definitely, definitely catering towards, you know, your external performance from that. I guess, you know, catering towards your internal environment. So I definitely agree with that. I guess we'll start to, turn the gas off and start to roll down the hill is the metaphor we use here in MindClickers to say that the episode's, you know, gradually coming to an end. But one thing I love to do at the end of every episode is, I guess, get a little bit of insight from your perspective. So say we run through a hypothetical that there is a team, or, you know, a couple of players who have just formed a team who are really looking to take it to the next level. They've started entering some tournaments. They've started to, you know, create some voice and some reason for themselves within the esports region and within the esports scene. You know, what advice would you give to some of these people who are looking to take their team or looking to take their individual gameplay to the next level to start to look towards an organization?
A couple things is like, are they wanting to build their own organization? Because that's a little bit different answer, but we'll just assume that they do, right? Or that they want to join. I think it's like with anything, you have to have like the why that you're doing it. Like, what is your why?
Right.
And then so from that, you get your mission and your vision, right? And then that kind of becomes your North Star of like who you talk to, why it's important. So there's kind of that, like we fall back on that a lot, right? Like I use the, you know, what was it? Like Larry's used mattress farm, but like, yeah, like that doesn't align to our vision and values and our why, right? So that was an easy no, not that that's a real company, but you see what I'm saying. So for them in that situation, it's like keep competing at a high level, you know, have a plan, right? Like I've talked to, we're pretty accessible, I think. Like it's, you know, in my career, just as a side note, what I'll say is that, you know, mentors and mentees and asking people for help, generally most people will do that, right? So I definitely would say reach out, you know, find people that you can bridge and broker your relationships and find out about. Depends on how serious you want to get, right? But it's like, you're going to need an LLC. You're going to need like insurance if you get a big sponsor. You're going to need like, you know, there's a lot of things that you may need that you may not know. So kind of like have your plan, right? What's your 30, 60, 90? Yep. What's your 18 months, right? How do you measure it? And then the other thing that I think is really, really important is content, content, content. At the end of the day, people want to connect to you. Why are you doing what you're doing? What makes you different as a player? You're great, fantastic, but tell me more, right? And so
right.
it's simple but not easy, right? Like, so you're definitely going to have to commit to like you know, practicing in VOD and all this stuff. And then at the same time, like, go out and make some YouTube videos, right? And like, make sure you're on social media. So that way, like, you can build an audience a little bit deeper. Yeah, so those are probably some things that I would say, depending on, you know, what the ultimate goal is. But yeah.
It depends. Yeah, for sure. Well, I definitely appreciate that. It seems like it's like a nice cheat sheet of the things you really got to consider. And I guess if you, you know, start to tick off some of those boxes, at least if you start that process of ticking, you have some sort of general sense and direction in where you want to go. And that passion's, you know, gradually going to spur that on. So I really appreciate that insight. And I definitely think that there's a lot of players and coaches who listen to MindClickers who are a little bit uncertain about that direction, where they want to go and whether they want to pursue a career in esports professionally and long term. And that kind of, how that process starts to begin to, you know, come to fruition. So I really appreciate that, Mark.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, there's a lot, I mean, just like anything, right? But there's a lot that goes into it. And that's what's so exciting about, you know, gaming in general or esports. It's like there's casting and production and content. And then when you get into content, it's like, oh my gosh, it's graphics, videography, 3D, 2D, skins. Like, oh my gosh, like somebody has to do the taxes, right? Somebody has to be finance, right? Somebody has to run your social media. And so that part is really exciting, but you also have to have a plan for that, right? Like, who are you going to get? Who do you know? How are you going to do it, right? Like, if you're a player or a coach, like, you, like, it's a good idea to have, like, counsel, like, a, like, legal, that, like, there are real contracts that happen. And, you know, we would never want anybody just to sign them and send, right? Like, so yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And it's just like, it's probably like anything, like, take it as a plan. Like, it's one thing to be, like, really competitive and highly competitive in a sport. That's probably not, you know, that's what you're doing, that not necessarily what your vision is. So how do you just make these small little bite-sized pieces to get where you're going, and ask a lot of questions to a lot of people that you like, people that are doing the same, and that will be really helpful in your journey.
For sure. Fantastic. I really appreciate that. I guess also for everyone listening, where can we find you on all your socials, and where can we find the KCP as well?
Yeah. So KCP.gg, Pioneers GG on mostly everything. I think everything. Yes. Yep. Thank you for that. I should definitely know that. Yeah, it's the best way to find us for sure.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate coming on today, Mark. And I think we had a really good chat in regards to looking at North American as an ecosystem, but then also looking at the KCP and what they're doing as a whole, and, you know, that kind of that ground up structure and looking towards, you know, external allied health professionals and looking at the player to coach relationship. And I really think there's some fantastic key points that people can take from this episode that can really be incorporated into their scene and in their region as well. So I really appreciate coming on and sharing some of those crucial insights.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Excited to talk KCP all day.
No worries. Thank you very much, Mark, and enjoy the rest of your day.
I gotcha.